Shut up and sit down.
You're listening to The Bridge, keeping you connected with all things sports. Here's your host, John Lund.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to The Bridge, keeping you connected with all things sports. I'm your host, John Lund, your multimedia sports enthusiast, bringing you this podcast and whatever else I might happen to have up my sleeve in episode 2 of The Bridge. Now, in case you've been living under a rock, I'm sure you're aware that we are in the crux of March Madness, probably the most wonderful time of the year when it comes to sports fans. I actually contacted the former publicist of Andy Williams, who sings the Christmas tune, It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year, to see if I could get the copyright permission to play that as my intro for this week. But unfortunately, that's not something that he deals with anymore, and I didn't want to take the extra steps necessary to contact his estate or wherever else I would have to go for that. So you're just going to have to deal with the typical introduction for this week. But you get the gist of things. It is the most wonderful time of the year. Maybe not for some of you, though, because like most able-bodied Americans, at this point, most people's brackets are already busted. And if you fall into that category, just raise your hand. I won't see it, but I'll know. I'll feel it deep down. I'm not doing too bad or too good, I guess you could say. One of my Final Four teams, unfortunately, is already bye-bye, them being Villanova. A lot of people had Iowa State going far in the tournament, though I'm sure that probably 90% of those people have yet to see or did not see Iowa State actually play a basketball game. And if you missed day one of the games, you missed your opportunity to see them take the floor. So shame on you for that. But I'd like to get started getting into what has happened thus far in the NCAA tournament. I want this podcast to come out once a week, and I waited purposefully to do it on Sunday night just so I would be able to do a wrap-up of all the games that are being played. Currently, I think there's one game still being played, that being Northern Iowa in Louisville, so I'm sure you're not going to be too downtrodden if I don't get those results in the show. But I've tried to watch basically all the other games and give a little bit of rundown on what I saw for each game. Some games have more than others because some are just more interesting than others. I actually have about 6 pages worth of show notes for you this week. That's probably more work than I've done for the majority of the projects or papers that I had to do while in college, so I hope you're happy with that. I'm also battling a cold. I've been drinking tea this weekend. As a male, going into the store to buy tea is a pretty low point in life, but I did do that. I bought some peach tea and some sleepy time tea and some Alka-Seltzer cold, and the cashier was probably wondering where my priorities are, or at least hoping that it was for my wife. But no, they were mine. It's my tea, and I'm happy to be drinking it. It's actually not that bad. It's like a peach pie right in your mouth. But enough about that. We'll push through. It's okay. Let's get things started talking about day one of the NCAA tournament, which was this past Thursday. I don't really have them in order based on region or time. I just kind of threw them all together for what was played on day one. And they're in no sort of order, but I guess you'll be able to kind of bear with me here. And we'll just go over what happened this past week. There were some upsets. There were some gimmies. There were some, of course, that happened. For day one in general, there were 5 games decided by 1 point for the first time in tournament history. So there were 5 1-point games, and they were all amazing. It really started off the tournament the way all fans like to see it start off, with some close basketball, some buzzer beaters, some upsets. It was great. Unless, of course, you filled out a bracket, in which case it was probably pretty disappointing. But we'll get to that. So we had a pair of 14 seeds winning on the same day for the first time in 20 years. We had 8 contests come down to the final possession. So half of Thursday's games were or could have been won or tied on the game's final shot, which just goes to show that it was a great opening day for the tournament and could have been a sign of things to come. But day two wasn't as exciting. We'll get to that in a little bit as well. So first I have down here, we had the 8-9 game. NC State played LSU, and NC State edged the Tigers 66-65. NC State, of course, being an ACC team, probably the best conference this year overall. And after Saturday, I believe the ACC's record was 9-0, so that just goes to show you the talent that was found in that part of the league. But LSU basically had this game won. They controlled the game for 35 minutes. They were going after loose balls. They were getting the rebounds. At one point, they led by 16 points and were up 62-48 with 9:15 left. It really looked like the game was in the bag. But then the Tigers scored 3 points the rest of the game. So they went 10 minutes without a field goal. They shot 29% from the field in the second half, and they missed 10 of 22 free throws. Down the stretch, they couldn't throw the ball into the ocean from the foul line, and that's just not something that's going to get you games won when it comes tournament time. NC State ended up scoring in the final second with a lefty jump hook by BJ Anya. I just wanted to say his name. I didn't really know much about him, but I know he scored the 4 final points for NC State, and that was the only 4 points he scored that game. So way to go, BJ! And NC State moved on and sent LSU home with a disappointing game. And if you had them winning, it was like, you know, thanks a lot, Tigers. Thanks a lot for letting me down. We had a 3-14 game in Notre Dame versus Northeastern. That one was 69-65 in favor of the Fighting Irish. Northeastern actually gave them a pretty big battle. They had the ball with about 20 seconds left and a chance to tie, but they kind of panicked and nobody really knew who was going to take the final shot, which ended up resulting in a turnover, and that was kind of the end of the game. They did out-rebound Notre Dame 33-17 and appeared to have an opportunity to put that upset on the board, but unfortunately at the end, like I said, no one really knew who wanted to shoot the ball, and because of that, they went home. Moving over to an 11-6 game, we had UCLA against SMU, and UCLA pulled out the 60-59 win. Now, UCLA coming into this tournament were under a lot of scrutiny from people who thought that they shouldn't have even been in the tournament, myself included. But UCLA had a very strong strength of schedule. The only unfortunate part for them is they didn't beat the teams that they were playing who were of strength. They played Kentucky and I think only had like 12 points at the half, so they got shellacked by them. They lost to Kansas, they lost to Gonzaga, the list goes on and on of teams that they couldn't beat who they could possibly face in the tournament, so I wasn't really sure why they got selected. It was probably from the committee looking at the LA media and thinking, how else are we going to get people over there in the West to get interest in this tournament? Let's throw in UCLA. Everybody knows them. They've got those nice blue and gold uniforms. We'll get them in there and give them a shot. And of course, as luck would have it, UCLA ends up getting the upset over SMU. However, it was quite controversial. And if you missed the game, shame on you. So we had UCLA's Bryce Alford, the coach's son, who for the game shot 9 from 11 from behind the three-point arc. He was just draining threes in rhythm to keep UCLA in the game, and it was utterly ridiculous, the shots he was making. I think the rest of the team went 1 for 9 from behind the arc, so he was really carrying them from three and carrying them in the game, and there's about 12 seconds to go. He gets the ball over by the left wing, and he's double-teamed by two guys, and he just lets go this prayer, this chuck of a shot, from no man's land, well beyond the three-point line. And as soon as it left his hands, I was thinking, that's going wide right, and it's not even going to hit the rim. That's an air ball. What kind of a shot was that? So the ball's up in the air, and an SMU defender jumps up and taps it away, and the referees immediately called goaltending. So I am confused by this because, as I mentioned, from his hand, it looks like it wasn't going to touch the rim, and it appeared that the defender just went up to slap it because he knew it wasn't going to touch the rim either. And we've seen all these replays where the ball trajectory and where it was shot and the angle and if it's going to hit something, you really can't tell on replay in basketball. It's very difficult to kind of tell the arc of a shot. So some replays look like it would have nicked the rim. Others look like it wouldn't have come close. It was up for discussion, except it wasn't up for discussion because apparently that is not a call that can be reviewed by the referees under a minute or 2 minutes to play, which is mind-blowing. They spend more time over at the scorer's table than a substitute does with 15 seconds to go, hoping to just take off his warm-ups to get onto the floor. It just boggles my mind that they're not able to check that out, even if it was one of those, well, it's the referee's judgment, kind of like a pass interference type thing. At least take a look at it. So before you know it, the announcers are trying to figure this out, and we're in play. SMU inbounds the ball. They're running it up. They don't call timeout, which they should have because their players were in disarray from this call. And they end up actually getting two good looks for a three and for a two, but miss both, and they go home. So you hate to see a team lose like that, especially something that's not really within their control and coming down to a final call like that. I'm sure next year we're going to see that call up for review. They'll change the rule for that, but it's a little bit too late for that for SMU fans. They're very disappointed. And of course, UCLA showing the world they deserve to be there by winning that first game. Isn't that the way it always works out? Shout out though for Bryce Alford playing hard for his father. We had another father-son game that the son ended up making the game-winning shot, which we will get to right now. We had the 14 play the 3, Georgia State play Baylor, and Georgia State upset Baylor 57-56. And this game looked over. I mean, you wanted to see this upset. The head coach, Ron Hunter, tore his Achilles when he was celebrating his team's conference title win when they scored like 38 points and won 38-36. Not too much to celebrate about, but I can understand it. So he's on the sideline all game, sitting in this nice barber chair, or this stool, watching the game happen. And the game looks over. Georgia State's down 10 with just under 2 minutes to play. And the coach's son, RJ Hunter, scores 7 points in 16 seconds. Shout out Reggie Miller. And before you know it, the Bears turn it over twice. It went from 56-46 to 56-53. Baylor misses a dunk instead of milking the clock, and then Georgia State gets the ball back, and RJ Hunter shoots it from no man's land, like 5 steps in front of half court, just shoots this bomb of a three. Shout out Jerry McNamara. And he nails it. So he makes the three, everyone's excited, Ron Hunter after the three jumps out of his chair like he has two healthy Achilles and just falls flat on his face. Just goes right down. It was absolutely hilarious. He didn't care about his health or his Achilles. The building could have been on fire for all he cared. He jumped up and just fell right down, and even while he was down, he was still pumping his fists. Everybody wanted to make sure he's okay. He was actually hoping that nobody saw it, but no, you were on TV. We got it, Ron. But that was a great moment, and it's just nice to see these sons stepping up for their fathers in their time of need as a coach. I remember in high school, we were playing a summer league game, and my father stepped in as an interim head coach because nobody else was there to coach for us. We were playing one of the better teams in the league. I scored 18 points. My career high at that point in summer league games. We went into overtime, but we ended up losing by 2. So unfortunately, my father has the high school record of 0-1, but we can't all be winners like these NCAA teams. But disappointing for Baylor to go out like that, but a great Cinderella story for Georgia State. We had an overtime game and a 10-7 game, Ohio State against VCU. Ohio State survives, I guess you could say, even though they're a 10 seed, 75-72. The Buckeyes trailed by as many as 12 in the first half, and then freshman D'Angelo Russell just went to work. He ended with a game-high 28 points, which is an Ohio State record for a freshman in the tournament, and he just shot lights out and propelled his team to win. So they moved on, the Buckeyes, the Ohio State University Buckeyes. Our other 14-3 upset came when UAB beat Iowa State 60-59, knocking off a team that many thought would move very far into the tournament. They have the most dynamic lineup, up and down. There's no holes. Offensively, defensively, they're great. Okay, we'll put them along. A lot of people trusted that. Didn't really know much about UAB, aside from their football program being disbanded in the fall. Maybe that served as some motivation for their athletics. But Ohio State came in, Big 12 champion. UAB was an automatic bid from Conference USA, has the youngest team in the tournament, only was one game over 500 coming in. Their head coach said a couple of the kids didn't even know their conference had an automatic bid, and one of the kids didn't know what Selection Sunday was. Get off the team! How do you not know what Selection Sunday is? What are you doing? Anyway, needless to say, the Cyclones were like a 13.5 point favorite, and the Blazers just seemed to be the better team all game. They hit big shots, they went after loose balls, it really wasn't that big of a surprise that they won based on their performance. Next, we had number 4 North Carolina playing 13 Harvard. North Carolina edged them out 67-65. Harvard misses out on its third straight round of 64 win. They had a chance at a game winner, banked off the board. UNC led by 11 at the half and never trailed, but then all of a sudden, Harvard had a 4-point play. They went up ahead 65-63 with a minute 15 to go, but then UNC freshman Justin Jackson tied the game on a jumper and then had an uncontested dunk for some reason and put his team ahead by 2, and that ended up being the turning point to advance North Carolina. We had another overtime game with 8 Cincinnati against 9 Purdue. And Cincinnati edged Purdue out 66-65. The Boilermakers should be ashamed of themselves. They looked like they were going to win. 7-point lead with 48 seconds left. Then they turned it over. Then they made some fouls. Then they missed 2 free throws. Then a Cincy guy is dribbling the ball with 2 seconds left. He finally decides to break for the basket. Throws it off the glass underhand. It rolls around the rim. Stops on the back iron and drops to send the game into overtime. And the loss ends up snapping a 14-game winning streak in the tourney opening round for Purdue. Boo-hoo, Purdue. In a 5-12 game, Utah played Stephen F. Austin. Stephen F. Austin was a pretty high upset pick for bracketology people. That 12 over 5 always seems to be a pretty good guess when it comes to the tournament, but this time, Utah got the best of Stephen F. Austin. They trailed for just 22 seconds. Even though Stephen F. Austin had won 28 of its last 29 games and was heavily favored for the upset, they went home early. So then just to quickly run down the other games, there really wasn't too much more excitement. We had 6 Xavier beating 11 Ole Miss, 76-57. Georgetown as the 4 seed beat Eastern Washington, 84-74. Even though Eastern Washington coach Jim Hayford guaranteed the victory. Whoops-a-daisy. And then Butler is the 6 seed, beat 11 Texas, 56-48. Texas, another disappointment in the tournament. I don't know if Rick Barnes is going to be on the hot seat now. He was supposed to be on the hot seat last year, but then they won, and now they've lost. Who knows what's going to happen with Texas, but they've been a disappointment. Arkansas is the 5 seed, beat the 12-seeded Wofford, 56-53. And then we had the 2 number ones, Kentucky and Villanova destroying their opponents. Kentucky beats Hampton 79-56. Villanova rolled over Lafayette 93-52. But that would be their one shining moment, which we'll get to in a minute. Number 2 Arizona also beat Texas Southern 93-72. So the losers for day one, definitely the Big 12. 7 bids in the tournament, the number 1 overall RPI, and they went 0-3 to start the tournament. And also the state of Texas. 5 teams in the tournament on day one. SMU, Stephen F. Austin, Baylor, Texas Southern, and of course, the Texas University. Gone. The Big East went 4-0, but then they lost 3 the following round. But we'll get to that as well. Another winner of the day was my girlfriend, who I have fill out a bracket now. This is the 2nd year we've done this, and I always like to see what she has to say about why she makes the picks she does. Some are comical, some are good, but she ended up finishing the day with just 1 loss. And at one point, She was part of the 0.12% of people in America that had a perfect bracket left on ESPN.com. Very few people picked these upsets. Brackets were dropping like flies. Percentage texts were getting sent out to my phone as updates. Twitter was going nuts about how many brackets were busted. And she was just smooth sailing. The game she ended up losing was NC State over LSU. She had LSU, who let her down, and a lot of the world, especially those Tigers fans, not coming through in the clutch. But if you look at it the other way, she could have had those other upsets wrong, so it worked out. Very impressive, however, to finish day one with just one loss. So props to her for that. I myself did not do so well on day one. I did not have a perfect bracket. I had a little bit of trouble in the South region. I had the SF Austin upset. I had SMU beating UCLA. I had Davidson beating Iowa. I had Baylor beating Georgia State. So I wasn't too good when it came to those upsets. I also had Purdue beating Cincinnati. As we move on to day two on Friday, we almost made it through the day uncharacteristically without any upsets. And the upset, if you want to call it that, was cheap. We had a close one in the 4-13 game, Louisville against UC Irvine. Louisville edged them out 57-55. And UC Irvine looked poised for the first upset of the day. They were leading 55-53 with like over a minute to play. And they have a 7-6 center, which is just great. It's great to see Manute Bowles in today's day and age. But basically, the clock is ticking down. Louisville coach Rick Pitino is calling for his team to foul, and they do, but it's not called. A Louisville player lowers his shoulder for the foul, knocks the guy down, but it ends up being a steal. The refs don't blow the whistle, and Louisville ends up holding on. UC Irvine was not pleased, to say the least. Another 4-13 game, Maryland beat Valparaiso 65-62. Valparaiso had a chance to tie the game with a three-pointer that there could have been a foul called on, but very difficult to get that call with under 10 seconds left. The refs don't want to be the scapegoats for something like that. So Maryland survived and moved on. We had number 7 Wichita State beating number 10 Indiana 81-76. You gotta love the Wichita State Shockers. They had that perfect season last year. They made it to the Final Four, but they ran into Kentucky, and even this year they had a rough go at it. They play Indiana. If they won, which they did, they would play Kansas, which we'll get to shortly. But Wichita trailed by 3 at the half, pulled ahead, led by Fred Van Vliet's career-high 27 points. And they also got to the foul line a ton of times, which Indiana head coach Tom Crean was not very happy about, and he shouldn't be happy that his job is probably going to be up for discussion again, just because Indiana kind of has that Kentucky or Duke-esque vision of their program where they're supposed to be doing good things in the tournament, and Indiana's been pretty disappointing for the past several seasons. Then the only real upset of the day was the 11th-seeded Dayton beating out number 6-seed Providence 66-53. Dayton, of course, getting in as one of those first four and had some pretty big shoes to fill, because since its inception in 2011, a team's made it to the Final Four, three teams have made the Sweet 16, and at least one have been in the round of 32 in all 4 years. So at least they managed to do that. But Dayton was basically just like they were in the first four game, playing a home game. It's right near their school. They had a ton of home fans. I don't know why they didn't move the first four game somewhere else, but they decided to keep it in that stadium. The same for when they had their opening round game. A home game, if you could ever think of one, and they end up getting the victory. Then we had 5-seed Northern Iowa playing number 12-seed Wyoming. They won 71-54. Northern Iowa's first win in the tournament since shocking Kansas in 2010. I don't know if you may remember that, but it happened. We had San Diego State beat St. John's 76-64. San Diego State dominated the post. St. John's was without Chris Obekpa, who was suspended for something to do with drugs. And when my friends and I attended a Duke St. John's game to see Coach K get his 1,000th career victory, holla at Madison Square Garden, there were only two players on St. John's that really did anything, so to lose someone that wasn't one of those two players wasn't that bad, but you still need to have that supporting cast, and they really didn't stand a chance against San Diego State. We had Wisconsin cruise over Coastal Carolina, 86-72. Frank Kaminsky got his 27-12. West Virginia beat Buffalo 68-62 in the 5-12 game. Another upset pick was Buffalo, who was led by former Duke star Bobby Hurley, and a lot of people thought that his squad would be able to give West Virginia a run for their money. Unfortunately, they didn't score in the last, 2 minutes and 42 seconds, so that's not going to win you games, and they got sent home. The two-seeded Kansas team rolled over New Mexico State 75-56. The 8-9 game, Oregon beat Oklahoma State 79-73. Their uniforms weren't as loud as you would think, so I'm a little disappointed in that. He liked to open up the tournament with some flair, but they didn't. And one of my favorite teams to enter the tournament, Albany, coming in this year as a 14 seed. They've covered the past 2 years and covered again this year with the spread of, I believe, 13 against the 3-seed Oklahoma. They lost 69-60, but that's okay. You made the people at Vegas happy. 2-seed Gonzaga beat North Dakota 86-76. Michigan State beat Georgia 73-60 in the 7-10 game. Virginia beat Belmont 79-67 in the 2-15 game. This was one where a lot of people thought Belmont might give Virginia trouble, but they did not. And then last but not least, to my favorite team, Duke, playing Robert Morris in the 1-16 game. They cruised to an 85-56 win. The only real highlight, or you probably wouldn't want to call it a highlight, but a humorous note from the game, Duke center Jahlil Okafor tried a reverse dunk while they were up 20 with 15 minutes to play in the game, and he completely missed, clanged off the back iron. So Coach K immediately takes him out of the game. He's yelling at them, and apparently what was tweeted and said by sideline reporters is that Coach K yelled out, reportedly, "What's that fucking fancy shit? We're Duke basketball. We're in the NCAA tournament." That's the kind of passion you like to see out of Coach K. I just thought that was fantastic for him to just rip him over missing that dunk in the opening round game against the team that they should have and did roll over. That was just great. So all four number 5 seeds also moved on after day 2, and there really wasn't too much excitement when it comes to any upsets. We are flying through this. Look at, now we're on to day 3, moving to the round of 32. And our first major upset happened on Saturday when the 8th seed NC State took down the first number 1 seed in the tournament, coming in the form of Villanova. NC State wins 71-68. Now, this might not be too big of a surprise because Villanova's been pretty disappointing when it comes to having a really great seed and doing nothing with it. Since 2010, they've lost 3 before the Sweet 16 when ranked number 1 or number 2. So 3 times when they had the number 1 or 2 seed, gone before the Sweet 16. So this wasn't too much of a surprise, but a lot of people loved Villanova, a lot of those experts, because they were a well-rounded team. They didn't really have a big man, but they had 5 solid guys, and sometimes that's all you need to win the tournament, and they're going to go far, and they're in a pretty easy region when you look at it. I mean, there's not a ton of great teams in the East, and that was probably one of the harder regions to pick because there's just so many teams that could get hot at the right time and move on to get to the Final Four. So it's hard to say who that would be and who would be the team to beat Villanova. So I put them in my Final Four thinking, well, they should slip by these teams. Should have stayed with my heart and went with the ACC as the winner, but I did not. So NC State outscores Nova by 20 in the paint. Villanova still had chances somehow. They had a chance to take the lead with 14 seconds left, but could not. And we had one of our best one-shining moments at the end of this game. This is along the same lines of the Georgia State coach just jumping out of his chair when his son made that three-pointer. For whatever reason, at the end of the game, they show the handshakes of the players, they show the coaches, and then they start panning through the crowd, and they zoom right in on this poor girl for the Villanova band who's trying to console herself while getting prepared to play for her school. You could see the tears are slowly sliding down her face. And the band begins to play because that's what they do at the end of the game. So while weeping, she has to play her flute on TV with tears streaming down her face like a champion. Like a boss, she played that flute. Tears or no tears. I just want to know who the control room person was sitting in the studio who was watching all the screens going, camera four, quick, she's crying. Look at her play the flute while she's crying. Keep it on camera four. The poor girl. But, you know, what may come of it, she might get on some talk shows. She might get some newspaper interviews. Maybe this will work out for the best for her. Find the crying flute player. And it might not be a flute. It might be a piccolo or something like that. I'm not too good with those wind instruments. I'm more of a drummer myself, so those go over my head. But still, shout out to you, flute girl. That brings us to Georgia State, who went up against the 6-seed Xavier, and their Cinderella run came to an end in a 75-67 loss. It was nice while it lasted, but very hard for a 14-seed to win again, which just goes to show how difficult it would have been for UAB to beat out UCLA, who, as I mentioned, didn't deserve to get in the tournament, but as I mentioned, I'm not surprised to see them move on to the Sweet 16. They win 92-75, and now all the doubters can be put to bed because UCLA is in the Sweet 16. Then we had North Carolina as the 4-seed play Arkansas as the 5th-seed. North Carolina wins 87-78. Roy Williams tied Dean Smith for the second most wins in the tournament with 65, trailing, of course, Coach K, who has 83. In a 2-10 game, Arizona rolled over Ohio State 73-58. And as I mentioned in the opening round, Russell doing his thing for Ohio State, shot 3-for-19 in the round of 32 game. They go home. In a semi-upset, number 5 Utah beat number 4 Georgetown 75-64. Georgetown eliminated before the Sweet 16 in its last 6 appearances. So stay away from them when you're filling out your brackets from now until the end of time. Utah's bench outscored Georgetown 23-2. So that just goes to show you what type of game it was. Kentucky was tested in its game against Cincinnati, who, as mentioned, was the 8th seed. Kentucky ends up winning 64-51, improving to 36-0, but didn't really play too well in the first half. They were shooting poorly. Cincinnati was able to stay with them probably for around 25 minutes of the game, but only shot 31.7% from the field themselves. So when Kentucky is shooting poorly and they're still up by a lot, that's when there's a lot of problems. They have such a well-rounded team. They're very hard to beat if you're not shooting lights out, and Cincinnati eventually was not. Notre Dame had a close one against 6-seeded Baylor. They win 67-64 in overtime. Notre Dame going on to the Sweet 16 for the first time since 2003. They've been another one of those teams like Villanova or Georgetown that just always seems to disappoint every year, but they haven't yet. And as I mentioned, through Saturday, the ACC was 9-0, the Pac-12 was 7-0, and the Big Ten was 6-2. So they were the three main conferences that really had successful first 3 days. That brings us to day 4, Sunday, the final of the round of 32. Duke squared off against the 8th-seed SMU, and this was actually a pretty cool moment, at least for the head coaching staff. Coach K on Duke's side, Steve Fisher on SMU's side, the first time they had met in the past 23 years. You may remember they met back in 1992 when Steve was the head coach of Michigan when they had the Fab Five with Jalen Rose and Chris Webber, etc., who got to the Final Four for 2 years but couldn't win a national title because Duke won back-to-back titles for those 2 years. But humorously enough, 23 years since they met and played against each other, and no one on Duke is 23, so that's fun. But the game itself, Duke pretty much just rolled right over SMU. Jahlil Okafor had 26-6, and he made, shockingly, the team's only 2 free throw attempts of the game. The final score was 68-49, and that number 68 actually is a pretty humorous comparison when you want to look back at Duke's last national championship team from 2010. That team was also the number one seed in the tournament and third best overall. They were both in the South region. The Final Four that year was in Indianapolis, which it is this year. The first round margin of victory for both teams was 29, and both teams scored 68 points in the second round. So, could history be repeating itself? We'll see. We had 2-7 teams beat 2-2 teams, which would be considered upsets, but I don't necessarily think they were. Michigan State beat Virginia 60-54. The Cavaliers, 2-for-17 from 3 and shot just 29%, couldn't throw the ball into the ocean. I haven't been too high on Virginia this year. I know they won the ACC, and they were supposed to be this great defensive team, which they were. They were very good on the defensive end, but as you saw in those statistics, their offense could struggle at times. They had a great regular season, but they were bounced in the second round of the ACC tournament, were losing games late. They only played Duke and North Carolina one time, which I don't know how you're able to win the conference if you only play those teams once. But that's neither here nor there. Their true colors came out against a Michigan State team and Tom Izzo, who's just always prepared for this tournament and seems to get to the Sweet 16 religiously every year. We also had Wichita State as the 7 seed beat Kansas. And this is a rivalry in the making. Obviously, these two teams being in the same state hadn't played each other since, I believe, 1992. And this was the first win by Wichita over Kansas since 1987. Up until 92, they were getting shellacked. I think the last meeting they lost by 40-plus, but they put the haters to bed really quickly and basically controlled the entire game. Kansas led by 8 with 5 minutes to go in the first half, but then the Shockers went on a 13-2 run to lead by 3 at the half and then really never looked back and took control in the second half to take the quote-unquote upset win. We had Dayton go down to 3-seed Oklahoma, 72-66. Dayton led 56-49 with 10:23 to play, and then didn't score for the next 9 minutes of the second half. Not how you win basketball games. So the 11 seed goes down, and Oklahoma moves on. In one of the later games on Sunday night, we had West Virginia as the 5 seed beat out Maryland as the 4 seed, 69-59, and take that win. Maryland had around 20 turnovers and couldn't get an offensive rebound to save their life. So they go home, and West Virginia moves on to the Sweet 16. Number 2, Gonzaga, rolled over number 7, Iowa, 87-68. The 8th seed, Oregon, tried to give number 1, Wisconsin, a run for its money and knock out a second number 1 seed, but ended up losing 72-65. This was tied with 5 minutes to go, and then before you know it, the Badgers went on a 10-2 run, and Oregon couldn't find any answer for that. And they end up going home. Again, the uniforms were not that impressive. In the last game of the night, Louisville cruised over Northern Iowa, the 4 over the 5, 66-53. So Louisville moves on to the Sweet 16. Haven't really looked too great, but, you know, when you have a great head coach like Rick Pitino, great head coaches seem to get their teams ready for these games, at least in the first couple. So Louisville moves on. Now, there were two things that I just wanted to comment on from these 4 days of basketball games. One in particular is play-by-play announcer Vern Lundquist. I love Vern, not just because he shares half of my last name, but he's just a great play-by-play announcer. But he's had some flub-ups, if you even want to call them that, in this tournament so far. There's been some great plays, whether they be three-pointers or dunks or miraculous shots that have happened, and you're looking for him for this great call and this great exclamation point on the play, and he's just not there. There's silence. One in particular in the Kentucky game, Willie Cauley-Stein goes for this dunk. He soars over 2 players from Cincinnati and just slams it down. The crowd goes crazy. This put Kentucky up by, I think, 4 or 5. And you're just waiting for him to add something, and there's just silence. The crowd's going nuts. They called a foul on the play. It was an N1. And eventually the color commentator said something like, well, that's one way to do things, or something like that. And Vern is just sitting. I don't know if he missed the play or if he was tying his shoe or what he's looking at, but he completely missed that play. Bring back Gus Johnson. Let's just have a second to talk about that. Where is Gus Johnson when you need him? He would have had some emotion on that play because he would have been screaming so loud the pitch would have been too high for the human ear to hear. But he would have been there with the call. Vern was not. He's missed a couple of calls this tournament. I'm pretty sure he was doing the UCLA-SMU game where SMU had two chances to take the lead, one on a three, and then the rebound comes right back to the guy and he shoots again and misses. And Vern was just silent for both those shots. Throw something out there, Vern. He missed. Nothing. Nothing at all. So, I've been a little disappointed with Vern Lundquist. Maybe it's not his fault. Maybe I'm being a little bit too hard on him. But now that the games are moving along, you'll get those more recognizable names at the announcer's table. And maybe they'll be able to interject some excitement when a major play happens. I also wanted to point out those commercials for, I think, Nationwide or Capital One or maybe both. One of them involves Charles Barkley, Samuel Jackson, and Spike Lee just going around doing different things. Those commercials are absolutely hilarious. And those commercials where they use the former NCAA star athletes, they come back and they sit around a couch and they just do little skits. They did it for football. They had Joe Namath, Bo Jackson, guys like that. This year they have Shaq, who just makes the commercials himself. Christian Laettner's in there. Clyde Drexler might be one of the guys. But everything Shaq does in these commercials is just absolutely hilarious. Whether he's the main focus of them or whether he's just in the background hanging out, he's been absolutely fantastic for all of them. There's also a funny one where Christian Laettner's lying in a hammock made by the nets that he's taken down throughout his collegiate career, which was pretty funny. So well done again by those commercials. And lastly, this seems to be a problem every year, but for whatever reason, people keep coming back to the same well for water, and it's dry. And that's Charles Barkley at the desk with these panelists who they go to during halftime and after the game to add their 2 cents. You've got Ernie Johnson, who's a great NBA lead guy, who looks a little bit different now that he doesn't have his glasses and got the LASIK, kind of like a Drew Carey type deal, but that's for another day. Clark Kellogg is there. Kenny Smith is more of an NBA guy, but they bring him along. And then they always throw in Charles Barkley, who was a great basketball player for Auburn. Had to be. He was great in the NBA. Had to be great in college. He just doesn't come across as a Jay Billis or a Jay Williams or a Doug Gottlieb or those guys that really know their stuff when it comes to college basketball. And there's at least 4 or 5 different occasions where they go for him to input and he just throws some bullshit comment out there about what he thinks is going on that's just totally inconsequential to the game itself. For example, in the Kansas game, he threw out a player that was suspended, it wasn't even on the team, and said he needs to score more points in the second half. Well, he's going to have a hard time doing that. He's not even playing in the damn game. Come on, Charles. Get your act together. But it's just really funny when you know he's on the spot. Kenny Smith's always sitting next to him trying not to laugh because he knows he's completely off topic. But that's been funny to see, and I really don't understand why they keep bringing him back for more torture, but I guess we'll find out maybe next year. Now that we've wrapped up those 4 days, let's go over who's going to be playing next week in the Sweet 16. These games are going to start Thursday, and they again run to Sunday, which is going to put my show at a later time than I would like it to be, but we'll push forward and move on. We'll start over in the East, where who knows who will come out of the East and make it to the Final Four, because I certainly don't. I had Villanova going to the Final Four, and they're bye-bye. So in the Sweet 16, we've got 8-seeded NC State playing 4-seeded Louisville in an ACC tilt. Used to be a Big East versus ACC tilt, but Louisville decided they wanted no part of the Big East anymore and came over to where the winners are. So that should be an exciting game. I really don't know which way it's going to go. It's going to be a battle, and both teams have an equal chance to move on and play in the Elite Eight. Right underneath that, 3-seeded Oklahoma will play the 7-seed in Michigan State. on March 27th at 10:07 p.m. Look at that. We even got the time down for you. I have Michigan State winning this game. I think that they're the better team than Oklahoma. They got really hot late. And like I said, when you have a great coach, as in Tom Izzo, he can do anything with his players and get them motivated to win. So I think they're moving on, which means if they make the Elite Eight, they'd most likely be playing a team that they could again beat. So their path to the Final Four is definitely possible. We'll see if it happens. Continuing down to the south, we have the one seed in Duke playing the five seed in Utah. Utah has a lot of token white three-point shooters, so they'll be able to shoot the ball from behind the arc. I don't know if they're going to have an answer for Jahlil Okafor down low, so I think Duke moves on in this game, moving on to the Elite Eight. Underneath that, UCLA plays Gonzaga. I think UCLA's run is going to come to an end against a fast-paced Gonzaga team. Probably one of the better Gonzaga teams in the past couple years. They should win, and we should be seeing a 1-2 game, Duke against Gonzaga in the Elite Eight, which would be very exciting to see, because that one could be a toss-up, depending on which team shoots better from behind the arc, which team can rebound better, and which team can make its free throws late. Up in the Midwest, we have Kentucky as the one seed, of course, going up against West Virginia. West Virginia is going to have its hands full, as are most teams against Kentucky, who is just stacked in the starting positions and on the bench. I think West Virginia might be able to give them some trouble early, but that Cincinnati game might have been a wake-up call for Kentucky and probably won't bode well for the Mountaineers. I think Kentucky comes out and they might get ahead real fast, and that's going to be too much to handle in the second half for West Virginia. So I have Kentucky moving on to the Elite Eight. Underneath that, we have Notre Dame as the three seed playing number seven Wichita State. In my bracket, this is where I have Wichita State's run coming to an end against the Fighting Irish. But don't be surprised if Wichita State can fight off Notre Dame. I think this is definitely a game they're capable of winning. As I mentioned earlier in the show, Notre Dame is kind of up and down. You never know what you're going to get out of them. I know when they played Duke, they were able to win at home, and then Duke beat them by 30 when they went to Cameron Indoor Stadium. But then in the ACC tournament, Notre Dame got the best of them in the championship game, which was something that Coach K was not too pleased about and supposedly ripped his team for their performance in that championship game. And it has showed because they played well in the first two games. But I have Notre Dame winning on my bracket. I'm pulling for Wichita State. They play March 26th at 7:15 p.m., so that'll be Thursday night, and that Kentucky game will follow at 9:45. Also on Thursday, underneath that in the West bracket, we have number one Wisconsin against North Carolina as the four seed. I have Wisconsin moving on in this game. North Carolina has been up and down this season. Some games they've played really well and others they haven't shown up for. And Wisconsin is very good all around. As we mentioned earlier in the show, Frank Kaminsky is a great all-around player down low and behind the arc. North Carolina might be able to contend with him down low. So we'll see if maybe North Carolina presses a little bit and gets under Wisconsin's skin. They might be able to hold on and maybe eke out a victory. It wouldn't shock me if they were to win. North Carolina has looked really good this season, but as I mentioned, some games they just don't show up. And if that happens to be the case on that Thursday night, that's not going to be good for them, and they're going to be going home. And lastly in the West, we have Xavier playing Arizona, a 6 versus 2 seed. I have Arizona. I don't think they'll have too many problems against Xavier. I think they'll win that game and move on to the Elite Eight. So that game is at 10:17 p.m. on Thursday. So we got those four teams playing on Thursday, the aforementioned teams playing on Friday, and that will follow with a Saturday-Sunday of the Elite Eight. And before you know it, we will be in the Final Four of this NCAA tournament. I'll go a little bit deeper as far as team biographies and some of the players that are going to have impacts and who to look out for when we get to those later games next week. Now there's just too many games to go over. I've already wasted enough of your time going to how we got here on this Sunday night. So next show, there'll be a little bit more in-depth on some of the players and keys for each team to advance when it comes time to getting to the Final Four. And that's where we stand right now as far as brackets are concerned. For those of you that are interested, I am one game ahead of my girlfriend in the bracket, so we're good there. It hasn't been great. I'm down, let's see, 5 Sweet 16 teams. And as I mentioned, Villanova going to the Final Four hurt. But as of now, there's still 7 Elite Eight teams right in there, ready to go. So maybe that'll be good. We'll see what happens come next week. And I'll let you guys know where I stand. Hopefully your brackets haven't been busted too much. But that Ohio State game definitely hurt. Villanova was definitely painful. Those early round upsets aren't too big of a deal. The unfortunate part for this year is that since so many people have picked Kentucky to win, or maybe even Duke, you might have a lot of people in your pool that have done the same. So those early games are going to be what makes or breaks it, because a lot of Final Fours will look similar unless you went for some pretty crazy upsets. That brings us to the end of the show, and I hope I've given you enough NCAA tournament information to satisfy your needs. We previewed what's to come in the Sweet 16, and as I mentioned before, we'll talk about that in next week's show. Which teams played up to their potential and moved on, and which teams unfortunately had their last one shining moment and were sent home. You can check out www.londonbridge.com. That is my own website now. The podcast can be found on there, as well as last week's show, which gives you a little bit more information about the show in general and more information about me. You can also subscribe to my podcast on iTunes by searching for The Bridge or John Lund or both combined. I'm on there as well. You could also find the show on SoundCloud, you could find the show on Stitcher, and you could follow me on Twitter at London Bridge. That's at LUNDINBRIDGE. So as you can see, things are really taking off for The Bridge. I thank you again for listening. I got a lot of compliments from my first podcast, and I like to thank those people for doing so. A lot of, you have a great voice for radio, but that's really saying I don't have a face for TV, so thanks for that. I hope this cold hasn't affected my voice too much. In a way, it probably makes me sound a lot cooler than I actually am. Thanks again for listening. I hope you guys come back for more next week. We'll talk about what happened in the Sweet 16 and what went down in the Elite 8. We'll preview the teams that made it to the Final Four and go a little bit more in-depth about what stands in their way for a national championship. We might talk some NBA hoops. We might hit the baseball diamond and talk a little bit about what teams to look out for then. But there's definitely going to be a lot more basketball and anything else we have up our sleeves here on The Bridge, keeping you connected with all things sports.